Hello, and welcome to Jason and Jeremy John About Justice League. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jeremy.
And this is the podcast where two friends who are also nerds talk about each episode of Justice League, the animated series, over the internet through a service called Clean Feed. It's not a sponsor for Clean Feed, but we just wanted you to know. Because we give you our thoughts, our insights, our nerdy tangents on a cartoon about DC superheroes. And if you want to support this podcast, as always, or submit questions to us for answer on the air, head on over to patreon.com/Jawin.
Or if Clean Feed wants to sponsor this podcast, too.
I mean, come on, Clean Feed. We're literally recording through you this very second. The least you can do is, you know, be a peeping Tom and then, you know. Huh. I mean, we are using Clean Feed's free service, so it's not really like we're getting anything for this.
That's true.
Clean Feed won again. All right. Anyways, Jeremy, what is today's episode?
All right, today's episode is Injustice for All, Part 1.
Yeah.
It originally aired September 6th, 2002. Record scratch, what? That's a crazy time skip from where we were last week. Don't worry, we will talk about that a little bit later. The synopsis for this episode, arrested and terminally ill, Lex Luthor breaks out of prison to assemble a team of supervillains to help him destroy the Justice League.
Yes. Now, before we get too far into the main episode, we just want to remind you that we do have an email in case you'd want to email us directly. That's jasonandjeremypod@gmail.com. And providing that the file size is not too large, you know, we'll play it on the air. Just want to throw that out there. But yeah, we also have questions from the Super Friends. It's Patreon questions. Don't worry. If you go, we always ask for questions and we pull them from that post. The first is from our dear friend Ramon, who in one of the previous episodes said, please don't pronounce my last name. And then he responded with a comment and said, I got pretty close, so I'm going to try it again. So Ramon, I'm going to ask apologies right ahead of time. So this question is from Ramon Fernandez Arazogoitia. I hope I got close, Ramon. Anyways, his question is from The Enemy Below, one of our previous episodes, and he asked about this. So I agree that GL is kind of the villain in some parts of these episodes and that there is something of an angry black man quote here. But I'm wondering, is there a connection between John's kind of frayed relationship with the Green Lantern Corps and his distrust of people slash authority? What do you guys think? So, of course, he's talking about, in the last episode, which was the Aquaman episode, John Stewart Green Lantern was, and we called him on this, kind of an ass to Arthur Curry the entire episode. Would you agree with that, Jeremy?
I would, yes.
So, what? Yeah, do you agree with Ramon here? It's an interesting idea. Do you think it's because in the previous two-parter with John, we saw he broke from the Green Lantern Corps, and so now is John anti? Is John anti royalty, anti leadership now? What's the deal with this? I was trying to come up with a royalty cyst. Does that work?
Royalty. Yeah, I don't know.
Jason mispronounces things. New segment on this podcast.
I think maybe he's right that it kind of does just go to his general distrust of people in authority, like at this point. I think that in the aftermath of, you know, everything that happened to him, he really turned towards the Justice League, and then he sees Arthur as a threat to that immediately,
yeah,
on some level. And so I think he responds as such. So yeah, I think it does make sense having this story come right after the last one a bit for John.
I like it. I like you and Ramon like backwards retconning a continuity in this. I enjoy this. All right. The next
Ramon
question,
usually has great things to say.
He does. Keep writing in, Ramon, please. And if you have a guest room, let us know. All right. The next question comes from Drew Marks, who says, what were your thoughts on how they introduced some of these villains into the DCAU, the DC Animated Universe, everybody? And do you wish they would have explored more into the characters like the Shade and Star Sapphire? Well, Drew, I'm going to field this one first here, if you don't mind, Jeremy. First, the Shade is amazing. Awesome. It's a great character. From DC Comics past, the Silver Age, classic JSA Silver Age villain. But more importantly, James Robinson took the character of the Shade and made the Shade one of the supporting characters of his Luminary series, one of the greatest comic book series of all time, published by DC Comics, Starman. And so to see the Shade show up in anything that's not the comic books, I'm very excited about that. I actually think introducing a bunch of these characters in an Injustice Gang and Justice League and Justice Society episode is a excellent choice. Now, to your second question, I think this is where we have to come and talk about production stuff. Because do I wish they would have explored the characters? Yes, but you have to realize we have a main cast of seven, and we're introducing seven more villains. We only have, collectively, I think each episode is 22 minutes, 44 minutes total. So, you know, at this point in the series, we don't know that much about Hawkgirl. We don't know that much about The Flash if you were just to watch Justice League. So what do you think about it? I've been pontificating way too much, Jeremy.
No, I've just been listening because I second literally everything that you just said. Couldn't have said it better myself. I will add this, though.
Mm-hmm.
If by do you wish they would have explored more into characters like that, if you mean over the course of the whole show, yes. The Shade could have absolutely driven an entire episode of Justice League Unlimited.
And he's only, I think, kind of a mook villain kind of like this for the entirety of the series, if I remember
right. Yeah, they don't expand on these characters really at all. So
Star Sapphire as well could have carried an entire episode as the villain.
Absolutely. And by the time you're in that Unlimited format, you really could have done more villain-focused stuff than they could have, and
sure,
it would have been great. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's too early at this point in the show. There's seven main characters. We don't even know Wonder Woman's deal.
No, and it's only episode eight.
Yeah. And like in terms of production order, this is where it's supposed to be. So this is still before Wonder Woman's episode.
Yeah, we still literally know nothing about Wonder Woman. We don't know anything with the island.
It aired after it, but yeah. So
it's very interesting. Well, thank you for that question, Drew. All right, let's get to the next segment, Jeremy.
This week in Justice League history.
Getting to the next segment. All right, now, Jeremy.
This week in Justice League history. As I just mentioned, this is out of order. So this aired the week of September 6th, 2002. These were produced as episodes 8 and 9. So if you're watching it on HBO Max or the DVDs, which is the order we're doing it, it's in the correct order. But if you watched it as it aired, these episodes were 18 and 19 of the first season. This creates a few continuity issues as it takes place before several of the others. In addition to the obvious second appearance of the Injustice Gang in the episode Fury, Lex Luthor wears his new battle armor in Legends, and Flash makes reference to Solomon Grundy in The Brave and the Bold. So,
but for
just
us,
get that out of the way.
For us, we won't encounter those problems.
No, we won't.
Great.
But just throwing that out there as a piece of trivia.
All right. Yeah.
And explaining why the number one stuff is all of a sudden in a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
But we will go back to earlier, basically right after these two episodes.
Yeah. We'll get to that as well, because that was going to be a big part of the next segment as well.
Yeah. So, the number one song, September 6th, 2002, was Dilemma by Nelly featuring Kelly Rowland.
Don't know that one.
I
don't
want
to play it either.
Yeah, you probably would if you heard it.
All right.
It was big. The number one movie was Signs.
Yeah, I saw that movie in theaters, man.
I did too.
Besides the obvious problems with the lead star, I actually kind of like Signs. Just going to say it. Yes, it has a idiotic climax, but I think the rest of the movie actually holds up.
There are elements of Signs that are very interesting.
That's the most diplomatic answer I've ever heard Jeremy Skinner give. That is.
I like M. Night Shyamalan too. Like, but Signs, you know, isn't entirely my jam.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Totally.
Yeah. But also this day, September 6th, 2002, is Asher Angel's birthday, our very own Billy Batson. This is the day he was actually born.
Really?
Yes. September 6th, 2002.
That's scary.
Do you feel old now?
Consider our mortality segment. Okay, now we're going to move into a segment that does make me feel old. Star Trek versus Justice League. Now, because this was going to be a Star Trek podcast originally, we thought we'd chat about the one topic everybody needs to hear about. Who had the better episode this week, Star Trek or Justice League? And this week is going to be a very clear winner because on September 6, 2002, there was no episode of Star Trek at all. Star Trek Enterprise was in the summer break between its first and second season. That's right, folks. Because of this weird production order, we are already in the second season of Enterprise.
We skipped directly from the winter break to the summer break.
Yes, exactly.
We're in a Star Trek drought.
We are in a Star Trek drought. But fun facts, on this same day, September 6th in 1994, it was the first day of filming on Star Trek Voyager's Caretaker, which is very important because it is the pilot episode of Star Trek Voyager. And the very first scene that is filmed is very iconic for actually that series. It is the famous Tom Paris goes into the mess hall and fights the replicator because the replicator won't give him plain tomato soup.
So that's crazy. That was the same day.
Yeah. If you say tomato soup to a Star Trek Voyager fan, they're gonna know what you're talking about. So now you know. Yes, it happened September 6th in 1994. So Justice League beats Star Trek this week automatically.
Automatic.
With a pretty good episode, I'm going to say.
It is a very good episode, yes.
So let's get to the who's who.
Who's who in the DCAU? This is the episode credits. This episode was directed by Butch Lukic and written by Stan Berkowitz, one of the dream teams. We've already seen a couple of their episodes. The cast is Kevin Conroy as Batman, Bruce Wayne, of course. Maria Canales Barrera as Hot Girl and a police dispatcher. Phil Lamar as Green Lantern and a guard and a cop. So there's a real trifecta there in this episode. Carl Lumbly as John Jones. George Newbern as Superman and a guard. Michael Rosenbaum as The Flash and a guard and a cop. Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, who we are going to talk about today. Mark Hamill as the Joker and as Solomon Grundy. Jason, did you know that Mark Hamill is also Solomon Grundy?
So here's the fun fact about this. And this actually happened while I was watching this episode, rewatching this episode. I knew Mark Hamill was Solomon Grundy in Justice League Unlimited. I did not know that he was Solomon Grundy in this. And for some weird reason, I thought these two seasons Solomon Grundy was a different actor. So I was very happily surprised to find that he voiced both parts.
Yeah, it missed me entirely.
It's not clear. He does a really good job with the Grundy voice. Mark Hamill, usually with other voices, I can pick him out. I could not automatically figure out that this was Mark Hamill.
Yeah. You know, he did a really good job with it.
Good job, Mark Hamill. Yeah. You know what? He's underrated. I don't know if you've seen this movie called Star Wars.
Spoiler alert, we might spotlight Mark Hamill in the next episode.
What? The barely seen and recluse Mark Hamill?
Someone's got to give him a little attention.
Yeah, that's true. Because I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't seen this movie called Star Wars, it came out in 1977, but he is fantastic in it. No, he actually does a really good job. I was going to mention he is the voice of Wolverine in, just let me get to the end, X-Men Origins Wolverine, the video game, which, by the way, is actually an excellent video game.
No shit.
And he voices Wolverine in it. And he actually is a pretty good Wolverine in there.
Damn, I got to look that up on YouTube.
Yeah. Now, that might not be the title of the video game, but it's the video game that released for X-Men Origins Wolverine. But it's called, like, it's something
it's
very
similar. It's the tie-in game.
It is the tie-in game, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Let's go back to the credits, my sir.
Yeah, all right. So Ian Buchanan as the Ultra Human Eye, Olivia Dabo as Star Sapphire, Stephen McCaddy as The Shade, Cheryl Lee Ralph as Cheetah, Efren Figueroa as Copperhead, Jason Marsden as Snapper Carr,
oh,
Grant Heslov as Doctor/Father. And like I said, we are going to spotlight on Clancy Brown today. I'm just going to bypass that grunt out of Jason.
Hey, I just want to mention, if you listened to a lot of the recent episodes, Geek History Lesson, we actually literally talked about James Marsden just a couple of weeks ago.
I heard that come up. My heart went all a flutter.
Yep. All right, let's talk about Mr. Clancy Brown.
All right. Clarence J. Brown III was born in 1959 in Urbana, Ohio. He plied his dramatic talents in the Chicago theater scene before moving on to feature film with a sinister debut performance bullying Sean Penn inside a youth reformatory in Bad Boys from 1983, before scoring one of his best roles to date as the evil Kurgan-hunting fellow immortals Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery across four centuries of time in Highlander.
Now, I have to pause here, Jeremy, because yes. Highlander is one of my favorite films. And he has one of the greatest movie lines in all of history in that movie.
Hit me with it.
And it is, there's a scene where he is in a church, and in the Highlander universe, of course, church is holy ground. You're not supposed to be able to fight on church ground. And he has a mohawk, and he looks like a hardcore biker. And he looks at a nun and goes, "It's better to burn out than fade away." And she like freaks out and runs away. Anyways, it is
instant classic.
He is Clancy Brown is a fantastic actor, but I think the Kurgan might be his best role.
Yeah. Well, his expansive career stretches across on camera and voice work. The personal highlights of those for me are as Kelvin on Lost and Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Okay, this is a trivia challenge to Jeremy right now. New brand new segment. That's where you hear the sound effect. Jeremy, I know you love
Kelvin
Lost.
Inman.
There you go.
I knew what question you were going to ask me.
5,000 points, Jeremy.
So back to Clancy Brown. He also, I didn't know this, originally auditioned for the part of Superman on Superman the Animated Series.
You know, I'm going to say this. I think he would have been an excellent choice if they went with him.
He could have pulled it off.
Yeah,
he really could have.
Mm-hmm.
He, for a number of non-DCAU productions, he has reprised his role as Lex Luthor, in the last season opener of the series, The Batman, the movie adaptation, Superman, Batman, Public Enemies, the series, Batman, Brave and the Bold, and as the evil genius slash maniac Rotul, and several video games. And then he also portrayed General Wade Eiling on The Flash, who will of course show up on this show being portrayed by J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. All great, great casting either way.
Yeah, for real.
In live action and for voiceover, I would buy either one of them as General Eiling.
Yep, good either way.
All right, so I think it is time to get into the mission briefing, the main episode discussion, everybody.
All right, so we open on Lex Luthor monologuing real hard, standing over Superman and holding a chunk of kryptonite.
Okay, so I knew from the last episode, like everybody else, that this was going to be the Injustice Gang episode. And I'm going to tell you, on this rewatch, you know, because I'm keeping this in my head as the, you know, the same continuity, and I actually got really excited to see Lex Luthor again and to essentially see what felt like a continuation of Superman the Animated Series. Like, for me as the fanboy, like, this made me excited. And I can only imagine, because I did not watch this show live, in 2002, what people thought seeing Lex Luthor back again.
Yeah. It just has an inherent respect for continuity.
Yeah.
It, like, across this universe.
Immediately, I was like, oh my God, there it is. Like, this, I felt the way, like, I assume a lot of Star Trek fans felt like when Picard walked into the show of Picard season one, you know, like, that's, you were like, oh my God, I never thought I'd see him again. And here he is.
And they're both bald.
And they're both bald. Yeah, that's how I connect it. There you go. Clancy Brown would have made an excellent Captain Picard. Just going to throw that out there. Yeah, I bought it.
Put Clancy Brown in everything.
You want a weird, you know, because we go into a lot of Star Trek divergences here. You want to know a weird, weird bit of Star Trek casting that almost happened?
What?
Do you know who was in the top three for playing Captain Sisko in Star Trek Deep Space Nine?
Who?
Peter Capaldi.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the top three. It came between Avery Brooks, Peter Capaldi, and the the Oscar winning actor who was the chief of homicide who recently passed away. Give me a second. I'm gonna get to it. Because Avery Brooks was actually Yaphet Kotto.
Really?
Yeah, it was those three. So there is a universe where Peter Capaldi is Captain Sisko.
Wow. What a crazy lineup for that role.
I know.
That just makes me in my head imagine Peter Capaldi's character from The Thick of It as being the commander and just swearing at everybody.
Yeah, the dumpster. All right. Speaking of things that aren't dumpster fires, Superman.
Yeah. So Superman asks Lex how he's managed to pull off his latest scheme. And like any good supervillain, Lex Luthor would just be delighted to tell you all about it. This turns out to be a mistake, though, as it is revealed that Superman is actually the Martian Manhunter in disguise.
I mean, I could tell. Couldn't you tell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, obvious. The minute he lets the voice slip, it's clear. So Batman and Green Lantern come rushing in and they seize the kryptonite. And we learn that this has all been a cunning plan by the Justice League to record Lex's confession. And there's a pretty good little bit of dialogue at the end of it here that we should listen to.
Mission accomplished.
So much for your images, the benevolent businessman. This is the end of an era.
The end of your era, maybe.
Okay.
I love that line so much. It's so fourth grade. It's like the end of your mom's era, maybe.
it's a weird line. Now, we have talked about this before. The animated boys like to go a little high school sometimes. Right, Jeremy?
Oh, yes, I agree. Sorry, okay. I was waiting for more.
Nope. Nope, that's all it was.
I concur. My bad.
I was like, audio problems. They get a little goofy and silly sometimes. And yeah. That fits into this. But yeah, it's not maybe the best line.
No, but I mean, I enjoy it, though, because it's not that great. It is one of the best as a result of that. But I am kind of a so bad it's good type of person.
And the end of that clip, of course, was Lex Luthor pressing a button and leading himself to his escape plan.
Yeah, he basically destroys the top level of his office building and takes off in a ship.
Let's take bets. Did Mercy survive? Mercy Graves, his assistant from Superman the Animated Series. Created for Superman the Animated Series, by the way.
Yeah, because we actually see her later.
I think we do. Jason disproves Jason's theory. Right, Jeremy disproves Jeremy. Too many Jays. All right. So what? He hops in a hovercraft that comes from nowhere.
He takes off. Now that the kryptonite's out of the picture, Superman joins in the pursuit, but he can't quite catch up to Lex until Lex grabs his chest like he's having a heart attack and loses control of his ship, forcing Superman to fly in and save it at the last minute before impact. And he rips open the ship to reveal that Lex isn't really doing so hot and looks like he's about to die.
All right, Jeremy, I have to ask you. So Lex's hovercraft shoots Superman in the chest. Superman falls to the ground. You know, it just seems like a normal missile. Is that a
Nerf Factor?
For this show, not really. It's pretty consistent. Like, because it didn't really damage him. It just slowed him down for a second.
I don't think it would even slow him down. That's what I'm saying.
I agree. If he was on the comic book level, absolutely. Mm. But it's not inconsistent with how he's presented within the show.
All right. Fair. I'll go get one someday. Anyways, here's what I'm going to say. I think this teaser is excellent. Because you think the end of this teaser is either the obvious tropey end of this teaser is, oh, he got away, or we get him, like we caption him. And the fact that they twist it to the point where, oh no, he's having, we don't know, looks like a heart attack. I think that's an excellent way to end this teaser.
I agree. I think these episodes, spoiler alert a little bit, start strong and end strong.
I mostly agree with that. Okay, so Lex wakes up in the hospital.
Yeah, and he's pretty much immediately furious because he sees Superman standing over him and angrily rants that nothing the League has on him will hold up in court before Superman finally stops him. And the doctor reveals that Lex is dying from radiation poisoning, which is caused by the chunk of kryptonite that he's been carrying around for years. His diagnosis is terminal. And of course, he blames Superman like you do.
I mean, every time I see the gas prices go up, I go, damn it, Superman. Thanks, Superman. That's what I say. Anyways, I like this bit. I like this bit a lot because it is, again, very inspired by the comics, because the Superman writing team in the late 80s, early 90s, they introduced the character called Lex Luthor Jr. Do you know this character, Jeremy?
I do remember this character.
He is a ginger Aussie. He was Australian, who later started dating Supergirl, and he was basically Lex Luthor's clone. And because the original kind of chunkier, balder, classic Luthor died of radiation poisoning from wearing a kryptonite ring, and he put his brain in a younger clone body. And that Lex Luthor paraded around as Lex Luthor for, I think, like 5 or 6 years in Superman continuity. So to me, again, this is Justice League, you know, pulling out the sweet bits, pulling out the nice bits out to adapt it into a really good show.
Yeah, taking bits and elements of continuity and, you know, cutting down a lot of the extraneously comic book nonsense.
Yes. although we're going to, you know, although we get some of it. We get a little bit of it, especially when we get Lex in prison.
Yeah. So we pretty much hard cut from Lex in that hospital
to Lex in prison. Skip that trial.
Yeah. Boom, he's in prison.
Let's talk about this real quick. Do you think that would convict Lex Luthor? Just the recording of Batman's recording of the confession to Martian Manhunter?
I guess now that I'm actually thinking about it, maybe he is just being held and hasn't gone on trial yet.
Okay, there you go, everybody. Jeremy fixes it right there.
I mean, maybe, you know, that's the easiest explanation. I'm going to go with that one.
I just think Lex would have the best lawyers in the world and would just get off automatically. Like they would say it was entrapment or or they would say that proves nothing. There's still like all these other pieces of evidence
is inadmissible.
Yeah. I just think Lex is too smart to be taken down by the legal system. Yeah. But I also understand everybody. It's a kid's cartoon. We got to get Lex to prison so he can meet Mr. Ultra Humanite.
That is right. And when we first meet the Ultra Humanite, Lex is being tortured by the opera that he's listening to. But let's talk a little bit about the Ultra Humanite before we get too far into it. Do we have a sound effect for the Watchtower Files?
Jeremy, of course we do. There you go. We only have one sound effect.
Thank you.
Although if you want to introduce a sound effect, everybody, please, you know, just give it to us. But
please send them more.
We only have one sound effect. It's a lie. We actually have three, but it's okay.
So the Ultra Humanite was Superman's first recurring nemesis during the 1940s.
Yes. And I think this is on purpose. I think they picked the Ultra Humanite very much for that reason. And it's so funny. One of my favorite comic books to reread is like the first 20 issues of Action Comics, because it's very pure Superman. And it's very much like you get to see exactly what Siegel and Shuster were thinking when they created this Ubermensch. And it's so fascinating because Ultra Humanite appears in that, and he basically is a kind of overweight, bald, 40-year-old man, which is exactly what Lex Luthor becomes.
Yeah.
So actually, when Lex first shows up, he's a cult leader. So it's very interesting. So I think this is on purpose. I think they purposely put Ultra Humanite and Lex Luthor together.
And I didn't know this until I researched it, but seeing that and, you know, knowing the reverence that they have for these characters, it totally makes sense. Like, it's got to be a shout out to that. I was unfamiliar with the Ultra Humanite's pre-Gorilla history, basically.
Yes, because he's now, at this point, has appeared more as the Gorilla than he has as the original human.
Yeah, but I was just unaware for how long. He was, you know, still a scientist dude up through like the 50s into the early 60s, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the Silver Age that turns him into the Gorilla.
Yeah.
He's kind of like DC's Hank McCoy, almost.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's, you pretty much covered most of what I was going to say.
Just for anybody, it's Action Comics number 13, June 1939. He's just a very smart scientist guy. There's, you know, Jeremy did some research on it, so I want to say is that he, for a long time, he transferred his consciousness to other bodies, and then eventually he redeveloped an albino gorilla originally from Gorilla City and was able to house his super brain and his abilities in that albino gorilla. Because DC Comics, if they love one thing, they love gorillas. They really do. They keep throwing gorillas in there, and I don't know why.
Because I love gorillas, and I'm fine with it.
Really?
And I can't be the only one.
Oh, interesting. okay, but Lex doesn't love gorillas and because of the opera, right?
Yeah, he's being tortured by the Ultra Humanite's opera and somehow hacks into his TV feed and is able to have a two-way conversation.
Yeah,
with him.
We got
to
talk about this. There's no camera. What the hell is projecting that image of Lex Luthor?
And what did he use to do it? We don't see a TV in Lex's cell or anything, you know?
You do see a TV, actually.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I just didn't notice it.
Before he appears on Humanite screen, he like jams a fork into it.
That makes sense, I guess. That's how you do it.
Well, but the other thing is that they're CRTs. They're tube TVs. They're not even LEDs or LCDs, which I would even be like, okay, yeah, some of those would have cameras, or there might be a way, but there's an old CRT TV is literally a giant
there's
glass
no
tube.
Smart, there's there, no smart functionality.
There's no way to transmit at all. There's nothing to convert the image. You have to take the image and convert it to electronic information. There is nothing in a CRT TV that does that, or a tube TV.
I mean, criminal mastermind's gonna mastermind, I guess.
I guess Lex is just so damn smart, and that he can MacGyver anything out of anything. he's like an alchemist for like camera projection systems.
Just jams a fork into it and figures it out.
That's all you need. Anyways, all right.
Maybe he's a latent technopath.
I believe it. Are we saying Lex Luthor's a mutant? Is that a new theory? Is that a Jeremy's theory? Jeremy's theories? Lex Luthor is a mutant.
Yeah, I mean, it would explain a 12th level intellect, I guess.
He's a secret metahuman. It's because we're in DC Universe. But yeah. All right, cool. So he offers to pay the humanite, right?
Yeah, he pays the humanite to help him escape, which he ultimately does, and it seems way, way too easy.
It is very easy. Like, they get out, like, immediately.
They're out. Yeah, they're just out.
But all we had to do is walk out, humanite. Wow. Why am I paying you $7 million?
For real, Lex makes some interesting choices over the course of these episodes.
Yes. Yes, he does.
So the police are on the lookout for them, though. And also, Batman is in Metropolis for some reason.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I wrote that down as well, where I was like, is the prison in Metropolis, or is it in Gotham? Because, yeah, how does Batman get there so fast?
Yeah, no, they're Metropolis cop cars for sure.
Okay.
I guess that maybe Lex Luthor did go directly to jail pre-trial, and this is like the next day and Batman's still just in Metropolis. Maybe
I'll have to give testimony. No, Batman, you don't have. I'm gonna give testimony. They're not
nobody
gonna...
is ever gonna ask you to do that, Batman.
What if I tell them about the evidence I found?
It's inadmissible.
I planted it.
Well, don't admit to that.
I have evidence. They'll believe me, right, Alfred?
Leave me out of this, sir.
Yeah, like, I guess maybe he was just like, they're going to convict him and I'm going to be there. I'm going to watch from outside the window.
I mean, I'm sure there's like a Wayne Corps, you know, facility in Metropolis that he needs to be checking in on or something.
Let's settle this right now in the Let's Settlement segment. Jeremy, where do you come down on the argument of where is Gotham City, where is Metropolis? In the continental United States, where do you see those two cities in your personal headcanon?
In my personal headcanon, I sort of like Metropolis as New York and Gotham as Chicago.
That's where I come down as well, because I know Gotham is on the harbor, but I'm like, oh, that's one of the Great Lakes. But also, I've always felt for the longest time that Batman has always fought gangsters, and gangsters are in Chicago. That's where Capone was based.
Yeah.
So I agree with you that, like, yeah, Metropolis is New York or either Washington, D.C., one of those two. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of, like, they're across the bay, and I'm not a big fan of, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that Gotham City is New York and Metropolis is Washington, D.C. And even then, I'm like, I think they're too close. I think they're too close to each other.
Yeah, they should be a little bit further apart.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they're across the bay, I've always been like, well, Superman would protect Gotham then. It's not that far away. He can fly at super speed.
Well, and if they're just across the bay, then it seems like DC is just really into Twin Cities for everything.
Ah, that's fair. That's fair.
Because it's not the only one, you know?
No, it's not. Keystone City, Central City. But that was the circumstance of a retcon.
Yeah. Right. Well, still, though. All right. That's a headcanon for me, though, that those are definitely two cities.
All right. So, like, yeah, it's a little strange for Batman to be here.
Yeah.
Okay. But,
so anyway, he shows up immediately, you know, chasing after them, and they wind up firebombing a building as a distraction, which, to be fair, works pretty well. Batman rushes in to save a little girl trapped in the fire, but the fire spreads too quickly, forcing Hawk Girl to swoop in and save them both. And Batman has a pretty good reaction to that, I think you should play.
Trina! Daddy!
I'm used to being thanked when I save someone.
I'm not used to being saved.
And that's it, which isn't actually a thank you still.
No, it's because Batman's a dick.
He just sidesteps it, yeah.
Batman is
He's a dick.
He is a dick. Like, it is natural in his character to just be an ass. He's not a nice guy. He's lucky these superpowered people don't just crush his skull when they get annoyed by him. He's kind of an asshole. He really is. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways.
I mean, there's got to be a lot wrong with a person to do what the Batman does, period.
Yeah, that cowl's not comfortable. It's not. Let's be honest with this. You know, and they live in Chicago. Yuck.
Anyway, yuck.
You might live in Chicago. I've never been to Chicago.
I've never been either.
I've heard.
I just jumped on behind you.
Yep. Yeah. Gross, Chicago. Ugh. I mean, come on. How dare you have one of the best improv scenes in the nation? Ugh.
How dare you?
How
dare you propel Lauren Lapkus to the forefront?
That's like, right. How dare you be in an amazing cinematography background for The Dark Knight? Ugh.
Yeah, right. How are you like every metropolitan city in movies?
Basically. So Flash and Superman show up late, yeah, like they usual.
They show up. They say that the evildoers have basically escaped. And Flash says, oh, it's no biggie. It's just two guys. How much trouble can they give us? Yeah. Which, you know.
Superman's two original villains. Okay, yeah.
If you've seen any TV at all, you know how that's going to go.
Hey, let's talk about this real quick. Do we think it's weird that the Ultra Humanite never appeared on Superman the Animated Series? Now that I think about it in retrospect, it seems a little strange.
Yeah, I mean, like, they totally could have used him to a good effect.
I agree. But he would have been, and he actually would have fit in with the villains that the animated series used, and he would have been different and distinct enough, I think, as well.
Yeah, they totally should have brought him in earlier.
Yeah, get on it, guys. Come on.
All right, so we cut to an abandoned building, and we see Cheetah enter, and inside she meets Copperhead, and then Solomon Grundy. And then the three of them have a brief skirmish, you know, like you do, before the Shade shows up and handles them with his nightstick. And then Star Sapphire shows up to take his nightstick away. And then it is revealed that Lex Luthor has assembled this team with the purpose of destroying the Justice League.
Oh, sorry. I thought that just happened.
It deserved that moment.
You know, I was surprised by this moment. I forgot that we met Solomon Grundy this early in the show. And Solomon Grundy, you know, this is one of the things that I do remember. I do know that Solomon Grundy has like a heck of an arc in season 3, I believe.
Yes.
And it's great. And so I was excited to see this character early. And also, like, you know, I have more love for the Shade now than I did when I originally watched the show. When I originally watched the show, I was like, ah, this guy's lame. And now, since then, I've read Starman and I own all the omnibuys, which are great. And I just, even though I know he's not quite the same character, I like seeing him.
Yeah, no, he engendered such goodwill as a character that I'm just happy to see him, period. I'm with you.
What are your thoughts on Lex Luthor adopting basically an updated version of the Lex Luthor Silver Age purple and green outfit?
Oh, I love it. I'm a big fan of it.
It's a little goofy for me, but I understand why you do it.
But yeah, you're fighting borderline gods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You need a power suit.
All right.
Like, I'm fine with it. Plus, I dig the green and purple color scheme.
All right.
I think it works.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough, Jeremy.
All right, so we go back to the Watchtower, and we see Flash again unsuccessfully hitting on Hot Girl, and as usual, she gets the better of him. And then Snapper Carr comes in with a report that the Ultra Humanite has taken hostages at the Metropolis Federal Building. So the League rush in to save the hostages, falling right into Lex Luthor's trap as all of the supervillains are lying in wait for the Justice League.
All right, there's some things in here. All right.
Yeah.
Hot Girl makes a fastest man alive joke. Now, this is a kid show, but we all know that's a sex joke.
Yeah.
It's a sex joke. She's literally making a sex joke on Flash. That was one of the ones where I was like, similar to the O.J. Simpson joke, where I thought to myself, I was like, I think this is a little too old for your intended audience.
Yeah, I think it probably flies over the kids' heads a bit. But if you're an adult watching with them, you get it.
It's also a little mean. I think so. It's a kind of a low blow for, you know, Hot Girl and Flash, who I like to believe that each episode, in each two-parter, there's a week. So at this point, they've been together for 5 weeks, 6 weeks now? And I'm like, I don't...
And he's been gross to her twice so far?
He's been gross to her twice in 6 weeks, which is, first of all, uncalled for. But second of all, I want to be like, hot girl, that's a little mean. Like, you don't really... You all of you really still don't know each other. You know, by the end of the first season, I will give them a pass on they all know each other. They've worked together as well. But I still think we're still in the territory where this is still a team of strangers.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I mean, because later on in the show, you're going to get to the point where a hot girl is trying to, like, facilitate a romantic relationship for Flash.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. Yep, and then Snapper Carr, how dare you? Okay, so we're going to say.
Whatever. Snapper Carr's great.
That's just all for Snapper Carr. I don't care.
I was waiting for a new segment to come in there.
Yeah, we could have a new segment, but we should talk about this battle.
Right. So during this battle, Wonder Woman shows up. So we have our second story that actually features the entire League.
Oh, really?
Yes. This is the second one. Now, it would have aired as the third one, I believe, but in the proper order, it's the second one. You might have noticed, though, that I didn't mention Susan Eisenberg earlier during the episode credits. And that's because although Wonder Woman is active, she actually has no dialogue in this episode. She just shows up and fights.
It didn't hit me until she showed up in this fight that she hadn't appeared yet. But I'm really glad because it makes sense that they have the entire League in the entire Injustice. Yeah, for the first supervillain tie-in. You know, I'll also say this. I wonder... Is there a production reason? Because you got to think about this is an episode that has Clancy Brown, who is not going to be a cheap voice actor. This is an episode that has Mark Hamill, who is not going to be a cheap voice actor. Include that on the new actors that play Carol Ferris, The Shade, and Copperhead. They may have benched Susan Eisenberg because Susan Eisenberg's paycheck might have paid for all the guest stars.
That's a possibility.
You know, I wonder if this is an intentional production reason.
I would have to think that it is.
Yeah, I think so too. Because again, this would be and maybe they budgeted where they're like, okay, we can get them all in the second episode, but we can't get them all in the first.
Well, and I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff going on in this episode too, and having her show up kind of does all the work that you need her to do, really. Yes.
Yeah, and they probably used some hits and some from previous episodes.
Yeah, probably so.
Some, all right.
All right, so during this battle, Batman suffers a bite from Copperhead, who is in turn neutralized by Green Lantern. Despite this, the League has them on the ropes, and the rest of the villains escape. But let's talk about Copperhead for a second. When he bites Batman, it's like his suit bites Batman. Copperhead has, like, a fake snake head, but also has, like, real sharp teeth, and they both sink into Batman there. So, but Copperhead's a meta, right, Jason?
Yes, he is. But see, I think it's funny that you call this a bite because I think most Batman fans would call this a kiss from a rose on a grave.
God damn it. you got me. Okay.
No, it is strange that his suit has teeth and he has teeth. And you're like, what part? Where does the venom come from?
Yeah. Like, do you have to make a suit that also delivers your venom too?
At this point, I don't want to know what the suit is hooked up to. I don't want to know.
Yeah, it's best not to think about it. Let's just move on. So back on the Watchtower.
The real question is, where do you get real metahuman anti-venom? That's the real question.
I mean, I guess you'd have to, like, catch Copperhead and, like, extract some of it through a rubber sheet into a jar, you know?
Yeah. Somehow.
And then send it off to Star Labs and have them do the rest.
I buy that Batman has done it. I buy it.
Probably. Probably so.
All right. So Batman's being treated with anti-venom.
Yeah. So he's immediately ready to get back on the trail the minute that he's conscious. Superman attempts to sideline him, which goes about as well as you'd think. Play the audio clip of them talking here.
You got it.
You really should be resting. I know this must be hard for you, feeling vulnerable. You're the only one of us without special powers. But you don't need to prove yourself. You're a valued member of this team, and we're only trying to...
I'm taking the shuttle. Unless you want to try and stop me.
Whoa! Easy. Easy, Batman. Yeah, Batman being a dick. You know, it's interesting.
And Martian Manhunter just steps aside.
Yes.
He does not say a word.
I'm going to say this. I know that for most comic book fanboys, most Batman fanboys and fangirls as well, this arc is trope. We've seen it before, right?
Yes.
But when you think about it in the course of this series, and again, when you think about it from a production level, you always have to always assume that your viewers have only ever seen your show. And so when you think about this episode is pretty thin, except for the stuff of Lex Luthor being like, I have all these villains. There's really not much to it. And Batman's arc is the only thing that gives this episode to be a little bit deeper than just surface. Without Batman and having this arc of like, am I up to the task? Because, you know, on the other side, everybody has powers except for Lex Luthor. So, you know, he's that Lex Luthor. He's the mastermind person. So I actually think this is a really great arc. It makes the episode deeper than just a giant superhero fight. What do you think, Jeremy? Is it trope to do this Batman arc where Batman doesn't feel up to the Justice League?
No, I agree with everything you said. You're 100% right. Cause it is really thin outside of Batman. And like, you know, I don't want to spoil the MVS or nothing, but I think you could probably figure it out from the way that we're talking about this. It really is his arc throughout this. Second to Ultra Humanite, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that they are kind of the two protagonists of this story, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
We'll talk a little bit more about that in the second episode, though.
And so Batman decides to go looking for a warehouse.
Yeah. Before that.
Oh, sorry. I jumped ahead.
No, you're fine. So we cut back to the villain's hideout where Lex is admonishing the team for their failure. And they almost mutiny against him before he reminds them that he's going to die anyway. And that if they do that, then they won't get paid. And then the Joker crashes the party, wanting to join in the fun. And Lex is hesitant, but Joker says that Lex needs him because he knows how the Bat thinks. And then he pulls a Bat Tracker off of Lex Luthor. So armed with this knowledge and knowing that the Bat is on the way, they set a trap for him. And he is knocked unconscious by the Joker with a literal bag of rocks, who then laughs menacingly, a sound that signals our play a sound effect.
I want to talk about some other stuff before we get there. But...
Oh, okay, do it.
Okay, let's not get to Cliffhanger Corner yet, Jeremy. There's a bunch of stuff in there. One, I think is an amazing entrance for the Joker.
It is.
It's great. And I think I mentioned this on a previous episode of our podcast. I love the redesign. This is my favorite Joker look in the DC animated universe because I think it takes everything from the original Batman the Animated Series, and you can tell they kind of take some homages from, at this point, Batman Beyond Return of the Joker design, and yes, they kind of mesh the two together because I'm not a fan of black eyes with a white dot Joker they did in this fourth season of Batman Animated Series.
Yeah.
I don't like that redesign. It makes him look inhuman. And this takes a little bit of those things, gets rid of the goofy orange. And I just think this is the, what do you think about this redesign?
I'm with you. This is my favorite DCAU Joker.
Yes.
And, this version of him.
And it was just like such a good choice to bring back Mark Hamill. And then also, this is why I think these gentlemen are great writers. I think Joker pulling the Bat Tracker off of Lex Luthor is an intentional homage to the first time in this universe that Batman and Superman met, and Batman pulled that same trick on Superman.
Oh, that's right. That's a great moment.
Which Joker was in Joker. It was about, the episode was about Joker and Lex teaming up. Mm-hmm. I think this is an intentional 100% homage.
Well, this episode is really a direct sequel to it in a lot of ways because like, Lex's reaction when the Joker shows up is disgust because of that episode.
Because the Joker in that one, it was about they were like making technology together because Joker was giving him kryptonite, right? And then I think the end of the episode is that Joker and Harley take over the machines and screw Lex over.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So yeah, Lex would be like, I don't want to see you again. You're totally, but like, it just works. Like, it's so funny. And again, brilliant writing. For some reason, my head, I didn't realize up until this point that we didn't have a quote unquote Batman villain yet. And then the Joker joining the team, there's your Batman villain. Mm-hmm. Now, Solomon Grundy is sort of a Batman villain, but that's more of a recent thing than classic DC history.
Yeah.
Solomon Grundy,
I definitely think they were reaching back further for all of these.
I think so too. Like these, all the villains for the Injustice Gang, and we have a listener question I think that we'll talk about in our next episode that really we can get more into that. But unless there's anything else that you would like to say.
Well, yeah, one more thing, actually. Going back to what you were saying about this depiction of the Joker, they also animate him slightly differently than other characters. Like, he has, like, cartoon super speed.
Yes, he does.
Like, when he rushes into scenes and is up against Lex Luthor and leaves little, you know, like, air trails behind him and
he's
stuff.
He's like the Mask.
He's like a real life Daffy Duck within the context of this. And it's just such a nice little touch that I don't know if I really ever noticed before I watched these this time around.
I noticed it more in the second episode because there's a shot where he's spinning around a chair and they add like all these super duper speed lines that they don't normally have on the characters.
Yeah. It's a nice touch for him.
I think it works and it makes him seem more insane. All right, now it's time to enter the cliffhanger corner. We only have one sound effect, everybody. Jeremy.
So far.
Wait, that's true. Jeremy, the cliffhanger is the Joker has captured Batman. Oh, real quick, it's so funny when Batman comes in. I actually thought that the shot of them, the Injustice Gang, playing poker was actually a hologram. So I was actually kind of weirded out when they all stood up and they were like, we got him. I was like, oh really? You were actually there? Okay. You were actually playing cards. I don't buy that Lex Luthor would play cards with Solomon Grundy.
I think that's why Grundy explicitly asks, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah. But anyways, that was a fun beat. What do you think about this cliffhanger, Jeremy? Is this a good cliffhanger or a bad cliffhanger?
I think it's a good cliffhanger. I mean, like, Batman just got knocked unconscious with a literal bag of rocks, you know, in the middle of the villain's lair. It's a little cliche, but I like it.
I agree. I think 100% this is an excellent cliffhanger because this is an interesting way to take a cliffhanger that we've seen multiple times before, Joker catches Batman, and make it actually really interesting and really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised. It felt refreshing actually seeing this. I thought it was really, really solid.
It takes the classic and execute it in such a way where it feels fresh.
Yeah.
You know?
And the fact that we get to end with the classic Mark Hamill doing the Joker laugh and say what you will, like, Mark Hamill is the best Joker we've ever had.
I agree.
His performance beats Heath Ledger's live action performance. He is just so complete as the voice that you're just like, yeah, that is Joker.
I 100% agree with you. Yeah, he's the Joker I hear in my head when I read comics.
Nice. So this is a yes and a yes. The next episode, everybody, we'll be covering, of course, is, we got to finish it out, Injustice for All Part 2. Everybody, don't forget, if you want to leave us questions for the next episode, be on the lookout for the post asking for questions at patreon.com/Jawin, or you can email us. Jeremy, what's that email?
That is jasonandjeremypod@gmail.com.
If you want to send us new sound effects, this is the place to do it. Jeremy, where can everybody find you on the social media?
This time you can find me on www.linkedin.com/in/JeremySkinner8.
There are seven other Jeremy Skinners?
No, I picked that one intentionally to match my Venmo.
Nice.
I'm rapidly expanding my LinkedIn network. Get on it.
I like that. It's so funny. I didn't know that LinkedIn. I actually love that this is good. Please keep just always changing your social media.
Oh, that's the plan. Yeah.
All right. I like this. You're going to join like the.
I'm going to join stuff. Yeah. I'll have to. Maybe I'll never do Facebook though.
Yeah, screw that place. All right, you can find me, even though I use my Facebook side thing, Instagram and Twitter at Jawin. That's JAWIIN. You check out any of my books at jasoninman.com. And thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeremy.
And we have jawed enough about Justice League.